Hello and welcome to the next edition of Buffalo Who Knew, the podcast series that highlights the often underappreciated, sometimes unearthed assets of the great city of Buffalo, New York, particularly as it relates to the art and cultural and built environments. So without further ado, I would love to introduce my guest today, John Edens, who is the archivist of the great cemetery known as Forest Lawn. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
So we're here to talk about Forest Lawn, and for those who are not in Buffalo or have not been to Buffalo, it is one of the great cemeteries of America.
It is.
And let's talk more about the derivations of it. How did this come about?
Yeah. 1849, okay? Buffalo was beginning to boom. Population was increasing. They had been benefiting from the Erie Canal for almost a quarter of a century. Enter Charles E. Clark, a local attorney, very civic-minded person. He was aware of Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, which had opened about 40 years earlier as a rural cemetery away from the heart of the city, a rural setting, landscape. And he said, Buffalo deserves something like that. If Boston can have Mount Auburn and their outskirts of the city, and Brooklyn can have Greenwood, and Cincinnati can have Spring Grove, Buffalo can have a great cemetery too. The other side of this is Clark realized that Buffalo needed another cemetery. The first cemetery in Buffalo, the first public cemetery, was established around 1804, in property in downtown Buffalo, which is now occupied by Old County Hall. Mm. That cemetery operated until 1832, when a cholera epidemic occurred, and the city said, no more burials within the city. So the city line at that time was North Street. Mm-hmm. And so three cemeteries emerged on North Street. One was in Potter's Field, and two were privately owned. By 1849, there were problems with those cemeteries. Mm-hmm. Buffalo was booming. They needed a new cemetery. So enter Clark, who buys approximately 80 acres from the Erastus Granger estate, several miles from the heart of the city.
Sure. Yeah,
and this establishes the cemetery. And that's how it got started.
Okay. And it's also important to note that it wasn't just the growth, but there was also a conceptual shift.
That's right.
In regards to cemeteries.
That's right. A cemetery, no more a cemetery in the middle of the city, small, crowded, go out in a rural area, the rural cemetery movement, mm-hmm. Where landscape is important. And the land that Clark selected was perfect. Rolling hills, a stream going through it. And so it was very much part of this movement, which was taking place in the first half of the 18th century throughout the country.
And I read that there were three tenets of this movement. There was picturesque landscape, as you mentioned, yeah. And then commemoration and public recreation.
That's right. That's right. Forest Lawn is always welcomed, visitors, mm-hmm. And so the cemetery developed slowly. The first burial was in 1850. Those 80 acres did eventually grow to 269 acres. And what happened in late 1864, a group of public-minded gentlemen in the city, led by Lewis Allen and Erasmus Marshall, decided that they needed another cemetery. So they got together like-minded people, and they formed the Buffalo City Cemetery Association. And they knew what property they wanted to buy, and guess what? It was adjacent to Forest Lawn.
Oh, okay.
By April of 1865, they had acquired Forest Lawn, and the cemetery began to operate, continued to operate as Forest Lawn, but legally it remains to this day Buffalo City Cemetery. Now, when they took this over in 1865, they said, we need to bring experts in from other cemeteries. So let's expand our vision of what we're trying to do here. So that's what they did. They brought experts in from Cincinnati. They inquired at the cemetery in Brooklyn and in Boston to get ideas of how best to develop a great rural cemetery.
Mm-hmm. And it really is stunning. Yeah. I mean, what we see today, the rolling hills, as you say, and the bodies of water, is that pretty similar to what it had originally been designed?
Oh, yes. Those hills are natural.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the lakes are man-made, but the stream, of course, the Jacobita Creek, was the original. But the land was not suitable for farming. That was why it was available for purchase. Mm-hmm. But having those hills is a great, great feature for the cemetery.
It's the most hilly part of Buffalo,
you know,
for sure.
And initially, families were able to fence in their lots, you know. But then, under the direction of some experts, Adolf Strauss for one, they said, no, that's not the good thing to do. You're taking away from the rural, and, you know, it's ruining the landscape. So no more fences, you know. The other thing about this cemetery is that from the very beginning, Clark considered it the people's cemetery. Mm. It took him a while to even come up with the name Forest Lawn. He didn't start with that. And the people's cemetery, because while there was an affluence growing in Buffalo, at the other end of the spectrum, that group of the population was growing as well. Mm-hmm. Those of the lower social class, the immigrants that have come in. Mm-hmm. And so from the very beginning, he said, we have to provide dignified space for the for those people's burial, mm-hmm. which would be single grave sections, mm-hmm. that are as opposed to family lots with famous monuments, you know. And so that's always been part of Forest Lawn, to deal with both types, mm-hmm. of grave space.
Right. And certainly about the latter mentioned, there are notable figures.
That's right.
Who are buried there.
Well, Millard Fillmore, 13th President of the United States. We have 43 mayors of Buffalo, 32 31 congressmen and one congresswoman, mm-hmm. that one congresswoman being Shirley Chisholm.
Mm-hmm.
And those 31 gentlemen began with Albert Tracy began serving in 1819, mm-hmm. and it goes all the way through John LaFosse, whose last term ended in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
There are five federal judges, including Judge Hazel, who swore in Theodore Roosevelt in 1901 after the assassination of William McKinley here in Buffalo. And so some very notables, you know. And then throughout the cemetery, you will recognize names. And we like to say you will see on monuments throughout the cemetery the names of people whose names are on our streets.
Mm.
You will also see the names of those who built the streets.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good, as it should be. There should be.
And also, what happened as Buffalo, as the cemetery grew and influenced, monument makers were coming into Buffalo to, you know, for clients. Mm-hmm. And so some monuments developed, designed by really noted sculptors, from elsewhere in the country. It wasn't at the beginning local people.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo was an important place that these companies sent their representatives.
Mm-hmm. Right, sure. And so what is the perception of Forest Lawn, say, vis-a-vis Père Lachaise
and Mount Auburn. It's very highly regarded. Mm-hmm. Forest Lawn is considered, you know, on the par with those cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
And Mount Auburn is smaller, mm-hmm. Greenwood is larger, and of course, being in the New York area, in the Boston area, you're going to get some burials there of some very, very significant people, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure.
But relatively speaking, I mean, Forest Lawn is very highly regarded.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Forest Lawn. What it actually comprises, the acreage. It sounds like there are a number of cemeteries that are, you know, not located in the city that are also in partnership with Forest
That's
Lawn.
Right.
It has an arboretum. It's a bird sanctuary.
That's right.
Let's talk about all the composition of it.
Well, Forest Lawn began to expand with other cemeteries in 1998. When it acquired Lakeside Cemetery in Hamburg. And then we followed with Williamsville Cemetery in the village of Williamsville, St. Matthew's in West Seneca. And then after a while, became a little bit more aggressive And now the Forest Lawn group of cemeteries comprises 12 Forest Lawn and 12 other cemeteries in Erie and Wyoming counties. Though cemeteries vary in size, none are anywhere near as large as Forest Lawn, but some are quite historic. Let's take Lancaster Rural Cemetery. It has a significant number of Revolutionary War soldiers, okay? As does Griffin's Mills Cemetery near Aurora, the old village of Aurora. But those cemeteries, they're under our management and ownership, we try to maintain those cemeteries in the way they've historically been, with ties to those respective communities, because those cemeteries are very important to their communities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so in addition to that sort of collaboration or cooperation, sounds like you also have an arboretum.
That's
right. How did that come about?
We have, Forest Lawn has always had a forest, of course. We suffered great loss. Hundreds upon hundreds of trees were lost in the freak storm in October 2006. We contracted with a Chicago firm to develop a landscape renewal plan, and we're very actively involved in that now. We're a level 2 arboretum. We have about 860 different species of trees, in excess of 4,000 trees, and we're on a goal of reaching 6,000 trees.
Okay.
And within several years, let's put it that way. We encourage people to support us with the efforts, and we've gotten a lot of support. And we also a bird sanctuary. I can't possibly say how many species of bird that comes and goes, but in the spring, there are many, many very serious bird watchers on the grounds. And we do have bird watch tours. Yes, that's part of it, you know. And like you say, we have Jackwater Creek that runs through the cemetery. We have some natural made lakes. Unbelievable variety of trees. The cherry trees around Mira Lake are very popular.
Mm-hmm. Cherry Blossom Festival. So it's very much a living, breathing organization. Where does Forest Lawn go in the 21st century?
Where does it go? We're always honoring the past, increasing our knowledge of the cemetery and of the people there. But we have to have our eye always on the future as well. You know, how will Forest Lawn remain viable and relevant? I mean, Forest Lawn has always been a privately owned company, for the benefit of the lot owners, a non-for-profit company, no government support of any kind. How will we remain to be relevant? Burial practices are changing, memorialization practices are changing. The increase, number of years ago, we surpassed the 50% mark on cremations over full body burials.
Okay.
So we have to adjust to all of that. So that's why we stay on top of the trends in the cemetery field, and particularly historic cemeteries, so that we can stay relevant well into the future.
Okay. And there is an archive, the Wendt funded.
That's about the Margaret L. Wendt Archive and Resource Center.
And what's in?
What's there? Mm-hmm. It's a visitor center, but it's also our archives. Now, people say, what is in a cemetery archive? Well, of course, we have the record of the burials and the record of lot ownership. We also have fabulous records about how the cemetery was established and developed. How were those 269 acres acquired? Who owned them originally? What did we pay for them? When did we buy them? All of those things. And then how the cemetery has developed over time. The landscape, the roads, bridges, all of those things. So all of that's in the archives, as well as extensive material on people buried there, biographical information, maps through the years, all of this. Blueprints of monuments and mausoleums, blueprints of our community mausoleums, extensive records about the cemetery itself, in addition to the people buried there.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, and obviously, also you have an incredibly robust cultural program.
That's right.
That goes on. You do.
This is the 30th anniversary. This week was the 30th anniversary of our trolley tours.
Okay.
Our history trolley tours. We've been doing them for 30 years. They continue to be extremely popular.
Any idea on the numbers? I mean, what sort of visitation does...
Well, we run each Sunday, we run three trolley tours, and there are about 40-odd people on each tour.
Okay.
So then we run that from May to early October.
Okay.
Excuse me.
That's...
And then off and on, we've had lecture series as well, and to bring in local people to talk about things relevant to the community and beyond. Mm-hmm. And we're constantly trying to expand that program for community outreach.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the architecture of the main building. So I know the initial building when you enter the campus, that was George Carey.
That's right? George Carey, yeah. The administration building. And that Delaware and Delavan entrance, he did at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And those were done very soon after the Pan American Exhibition held in Buffalo in 1901, mm-hmm. He was the architect of the New York, Pavilion, which is now the Buffalo History Museum.
That's right. Yeah. And okay. Yeah. So I knew that he built that.
Those are very important. The bridges developed over time, beginning in the 1880s. They stone arch bridges. Originally, they had iron railings, and now it's, you know, concrete. The chapel from 1882. The Main Street entrance was the cemetery's gift to the city at the time of the Pan Am.
Oh, Pan Am
exhibition.
Okay, I did not know.
Louis Osgood Holland did that, built that. It was a competition. And the chapel... The chapel was expanded in the early 1930s by the renowned Buffalo architect E.B. Green, whose work is elsewhere in the country, not sure. Just in Buffalo.
Yeah.
He expanded it, created a columbarium in there, and an area for a crematory in that building.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot packed into this. There's
a lot packed in. And I mentioned earlier, there are different monuments in the cemetery that were designed by noted people, sometimes elsewhere in the country.
Sure. You know? Well, certainly we have a Frank Lloyd Wright design. Oh,
that's right. The Blue Sky Mausoleum, the mm-hmm. only cemetery design that he ever did, you know, which was to have been built in the 1920s for the Darwin Martin family, and that didn't happen. So Forest Lawn obtained the rights to build that, you know, to locate that in Forest Lawn.
Posthumously.
That's right.
Yeah. So that was done in what year?
2003.
Uh-huh. Okay. So this is all incredibly, interesting. And I think, you know, per the mandate of this podcast, it would be wonderful to hear who knew. What's an interesting factoid about Forest Lawn that many don't know?
You can't imagine Buffalo without Forest Lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly can't imagine the Gates Circle Delaware Avenue area without Forest Lawn. That was not always the case. And this can be very surprising to people today. That as early as the late 19th century, people were writing in the newspaper that we closed the cemetery. The space is too valuable. And I'm sure other cities have heard that type of thing too, when the city has grown up around
the
cemetery.
Absolutely.
And in the 1890s, the Parkside neighborhood, which was a neighborhood designed by Olmsted, and it's very near the Darwin Martin house designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, they wanted another route to downtown beside Main Street. Let's extend Parkside Avenue all the way through the Sisters of St. Joseph's campus and through Forest Lawn. Mm. This went on for years. It passed the legislature and that got repealed. The Buffalo Zoo, one of the oldest zoos in the country, started in 1875 as a deer park. 20 years later, they decided, let's make it a full-fledged zoo. There was objections to it expanding in the Delaware Park.
Mm.
So let's put it in Forest Lawn,
along
Main Street.
I did not know that.
Then there was in the early 20th century, there was a proposal to extend a very popular street in Buffalo, Linwood Avenue, through the cemetery, through Delaware Park, to meet, to connect with COVID Boulevard. That didn't happen. Then Buffalo, like many other cities of its size, went through in the late 50s and early 60s urban renewal, okay? Mm-hmm. A few years before that, in 1946, the state decided, well, we need to build a super highway through Buffalo. This mm-hmm. was before the New York State Thruway was even designed. And so they came out with a plan, but crisscrossed the city and come right along the edge of Forest Lawn, destroying that the Carey Administration Building and entrance gate. It would require the removal of 1,500 bodies, 650 monuments, okay, and would be come very close to the Red Jacket Monument in Forest Lawn, mm-hmm. the great Seneca chief buried there. That didn't happen. And then, as the city then moved to the late 50s, early 60s, destroying a number of things through their urban renewal and the whole, you know, the automobile is, you know, supreme. They did some very damaging things to the city. Mm-hmm. And they at that time, they proposed constructing a tunnel under Delaware Avenue through Gate Circle under its fountain around Delaware coming out at Potomac, which would have required some Forest Lawn property at the exit. All of this was the traffic is going to be so heavy, we have to do this. Mm. These are not things that we simply read about. We actually have the plans for all of these things. You know, none of them happened, thankfully. And, you know, Forest Lawn, those 269 acres around an iron fence have remained the same more than they changed.
Isn't that incredible? Not many parts of Buffalo can say that.
And though the city, it was not in the city initially. It was in a rural, considered rural. Mm-hmm. The city grew up around it, and the city has changed and will continue to change. Forest Lawn will adapt with the times, but for the most part, Forest Lawn will not change within those within that fence.
That's an extraordinary story.
Yeah. I mean, that is reassuring to people in the community that, you know, you can go to Forest Lawn today or maybe next year or 10 years from now, mm-hmm. and the experience is going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And we want it to be the same.
Incredible. You know,
and Forest Lawn is also a popular visitor site. People, I know I've done it. I always take visitors from out of town to Forest Lawn, and we get a lot of visitors from out of town. They hear about Forest Lawn. They want to see Forest mm-hmm. Lawn.
Oh, it's spectacular. Yeah. So thank you so much for imparting that information. That's really a wonderful story of continuance and maintaining a cultural site within the heart of the city. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming
and speaking
with me, John. This has been really informative.
Okay.